Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
When Marie Colvin was killed in a rocket attack in Syria in February 2012, the world mourned the loss of the greatest war correspondent of her generation, she was called. Marie was known for her signature style, her black eye patch, and the pearls gifted from Arafat, and her fearlessness in covering some of the world's most dangerous conflicts. She died while reporting on the suffering of Syrian civilians, sacrificing her life for the cause she believed in, the need to bear witness to the anonymous victims of war. Telling her story for the first time is Paul Conroy, a British war photographer who had forged a close bond with Marie and was with her when she died. His book is Under the Wire, Marie Colvin's Final Assignment, and it is a gripping and moving account of their friendship and of their final assignment to one of the most hellish places on earth. And it's a pleasure to welcome Paul Conroy to the roundtable. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks for having us on, Joe. It's a real pleasure.
A delight to have you with us. This is still, as I mentioned in the introduction, February 2012. So for you, this is still very fresh.
That's right. You know, in many ways, it seems like it was an age ago, and in some ways, it was like yesterday. It's a very strange one. That's, I think, writing the book was my way of getting closure on the subject while it was fresh. It was a difficult write, but I just never felt I got to say goodbye to Marie because it was so fast and sudden. So I wrote it in as fast a time as possible, so it truly was as fresh as I could make it.
I do want to talk a little bit about how you came to go to Syria and what your mission was there. But before we do that, talk a little bit about your working relationship and how the two of you worked together on projects.
It was the best working relationship I've had in my career, really. We met just before the last Iraq war up in the desert of Syria in a town called Qamishli. I tried to build a boat to sail into Iraq, which sounds rather bizarre, and it was. But when Marie found out that I'd built this raft and I'd got captured by the Syrian state police and eventually released, she just came in one night into the bar, looked, and she said, "Who and where is the boatman?" And walked straight over to me, put out a hand and said, "Hey, boatman, Marie Colvin, I like your style." And that set the basis for our working relationship. She really appreciated that. Get in and try and do it, which was very much her style. She was really tenacious. She would not give up. And I think that was the beginning of our relationship. And everywhere we went, we carried that spirit of, if there's a story there, we can get in to do it. But she had a fantastic sense of humor, which matched mine. Very dark at times because of the subject matters we were covering. And it was just everything was very much a joint enterprise that went the way me and Marie worked. There was no leader as such, everything was mutual. And it just worked for both of us and for the Sunday Times, who recognized the way we worked together was really productive. So they just put us together on everything they could, really.
You document much in the book about the final year and how closely you worked together in that year prior to her death. And you were working on various assignments, but they were all somewhat related of going to these war-torn countries and trying to document what was happening.
That's right. We saw these assignments as... There's many levels to war. There's the geopolitical level. There's the general level of warfare that people tend to see it just as a war. We found the best way of getting these stories of conflict out were by the eyes of the people who were affected most. They were the normal civilians who just got caught up in this horror. And to get to them people, to tell the true story of war through their eyes, occasionally involved a fair bit of risk, but that was, you know, Marie was so adept at getting to them places, finding the people and telling the stories through their eyes, which, you know, gives a true indication of the suffering of warfare in general and the people most directly involved. And that's why we ended up in the heart of it and not in the capital or some big hotel reporting from outside. We really found that by going in and meeting the people on the ground who were directly involved, gave the best perspective and the most realistic perspective of what war does to people.
Before you were able to smuggle yourselves into Syria in early 2012, how long had you been working on getting to that place?
Well, I'd gone out on January the 6th, 2012, with another correspondent, Miles Amore, from the Sunday Times, and we'd spent 3 weeks establishing contacts who would be able to get us across that border between Syria and Lebanon illegally. We decided not to go in visas because we didn't want the government minders and the whole fanfare that goes with it. So in all, I think we spent about a month before Marie and I actually crossed into Syria on that date.
And you found your way in there, and you ultimately ended up where, because you ended up where you wanted to be, right?
That's right. We were always headed for Homs and the neighborhood of Baba Amra. This was a very small neighborhood that had been surrounded by the 4th Division of the Assad military, and they'd been undergone a sustained bombardment for 18 days of just the most intense artillery barrage that any of us had ever seen. So that was our target, and that's where we eventually ended up, yep.
And you were there, and you were documenting and reporting the horrors that these civilians and rebels experienced, who they were thousands, who were under siege. And as the horrors got worse and as the shelling got worse, so many other journalists were fleeing the region. They were fleeing the city, and you write about this, of making that decision to stay. How hard a decision was that? Because ultimately you knew it was something you wanted to do.
That's right. Really, it wasn't a very hard decision at all. We'd spent so long getting to this place, to Homs, and after witnessing the horrors that were taking place, we both knew neither of us could walk away from that. That was, you know, Marie, once she found the story as powerful and emotive as the one we'd found, there were 28,000 civilians who were enduring a truly medieval siege. There really wasn't any way that she could walk away from that story, and I was fully behind her on that one. It was something we'd found, and to walk out, she had, in previous conflicts, never left them women and children, and she really hoped, we both hoped, that by reporting from that place we could make a difference. And I think that's the essence of it. You really, when you witness this, you want to make a difference. So the decision to stay wasn't so difficult.
Before we go on and talk about what ultimately happened, I just want you to give us a sense of an average relationship between a reporter and a photojournalist, and what made your relationship different.
On many occasions it can be either a great relationship or it can be very uncomfortable. Photojournalists tend to want to get as close to the front as possible because we know they're the pictures that will make our editors happy. Many of the correspondents will have a slightly different agenda. You know, they want to talk to pertinent people. And so it can become a bit fractious. You know, I need to do this, I need to do this. With Marie and I, it was very, very, very smooth. You know, I knew the story she was working on. I knew who she was talking to. And I knew what pictures would be needed to bolster that. It was never fractious. It was never, you do this, you do that. We both, somehow, we always knew what we each needed to do. and there was very little friction. Maria had a tumultuous past with photographers, sometimes working with them for a day and then accidentally losing them or not showing up or just sending them away. There was many occasions where some photographer would ring up and say, I can't find her, and they go, yes, she's already left.
Give him the slip. And
yeah, she would give him the slip, exactly.
and you made the cut.
Yeah, to this day I don't know why. I know that once they sent me to Libya slightly before and she went ballistic. You know, she walked into the office, you know, find some choice language flew about, I believe, and it was because she was uncontactable for a few hours and I had to go ahead. So it was, you know, and I'm very proud that, you know, I did and make that bond with Marie. We were good friends as well as colleagues and that. So I don't know what the magic was, but there was certainly something there that made it where, you know, instead of giving me the slip, she'd ask for me. So that was quite an honor, really.
When the final barrage of artillery fire came, Marie was killed instantly, along with many civilians. You were horribly injured with a huge hole in your leg. And at what point did you realize that instantly of what your injury was that you had sustained, and then that Marie had been killed?
No, it was a very, very strange, obviously a strange experience. The final explosion, there had been three direct hits on the house with rockets that had demolished various parts of the house. And then I was just bending down to pick up my camera to get a photograph of this absolute mayhem that was the house after the three direct hits, when there was just an almighty explosion. And I didn't go unconscious, I was awake. I just felt this kind of, what I thought was a piece of masonry hit me leg. And I just, oh right, that hurt a little. It was just like someone tapping me with a bat. But when I put my hand down just to feel my leg, as soon as I touched it, I touched the inner side and my hand just slipped straight through my leg and came out the other side. And rather bizarrely, my first thoughts were, oh no, hospital food. I had this terrible image of kind of leathery potatoes and cold custard and these bizarre images running through my head. So it was about 10 seconds before I actually realized the enormity of what had happened. And I reached and found the main artery in my leg and checked it was still intact. And I checked the bone was still intact. I then put a scarf around my neck, from around my neck onto the wound, made a tourniquet. And my immediate reaction then was, I must find Marie. I knew she was there somewhere. I took about two steps through the rubble and fell over. I just couldn't walk. My leg was not very good. And sadly, I fell right next to Marie and to Remy Oschlich, the photographer. And they were both dead. I checked Marie. There was no signs of life. And that's how I found them, really. I didn't know they'd been killed until I got my leg together and took a few paces. And tragically, they'd both been about 1 meter from the blast.
So instead of crummy hospital food, the immediate thing that you have to endure is a grueling escape and crawling through enemy terrain and riding a motorcycle through the dark and a dark tunnel and ultimately climbing a wall and getting out of there. At what point did you know you were safe?
Well, it was actually 7 days after I was hit that I knew I'd made it into Lebanon, because before the whole escape, the survivors, we'd all been packed into a little room and endured five. They knew our position then, so they attacked this house we were in for 5 days. So I think between being hit and actually seeing a doctor who gave me some painkillers, because the only painkillers they had were paracetamol. It was about 10 days, I think, before someone actually gave me some morphine and said, okay, you're going to be okay now. It seemed a very long 10 days, believe me.
Absolutely. And a year and a half later, how are you physically doing?
I'm not too bad now. The hole took about 5-6 months in my leg to heal up completely. I now have the ability, I can walk without a stick in straight lines. Obviously, I'm not as active as I used to be, but that's, I'm still doing physio. I mean, I'll never get the full use back. It's always, there was so much muscle loss. But I've been taking photographs for the last month for the British Red Cross for an exhibition. So I'm just slowly getting back into my stride, so to speak.
And is the goal to get back and taking pictures throughout the world once again?
Yeah, absolutely. I was quite adamant that when I was brought out, that I wouldn't allow the whole incident to put me off me goal. So when I was getting better and recovering for all the months in hospital, there was always, you know, I was never in a position where I had to change career, anything like that. It was just a psychological kind of crutch, really. I will get back to that position again. And, you know, it's really helped. It's got me through the losing Marie and also the big injuries I had.
I assume you think about this, of what you would make of the book.
Yeah. It was, you know, I really wanted to show the world what we had lost, you know, because not just the professional side of Marie, but, you know, the human side. There was a very, very beautiful person there that obviously not many people saw. So I really wanted this, a tribute to her and to everyone, is just give them a glimpse of what she did for her day job and for her family, to know the story of what had happened and just what a brave person, and, you know, what a darker place the world will be without having Marie, really.
Without having her and without having that kind of reporting of people who are willing to take that chance to tell these stories from that perspective, which so often goes mute.
Yeah, I think it'll be a great loss if people don't step forward and fill them shoes, and if the industry doesn't allow us to keep doing it. You know, there was a big backlash when Marie was killed about sending people into such dangerous places, but the last person who would want to see anybody stop doing that would be Marie. And, you know, without people like Marie, then these governments and dictators and despots will carry on doing terrible things in the knowledge that nobody will be there to shine a light on their misdoings.
Well, the name of the book is Under the Wire, Marie Colvin's Final Assignment. It is by Paul Conroy. It is published by Weinstein Books. Paul Conroy, I can't thank you enough for joining us this morning and sharing your story and telling us about Marie. I wish you nothing but the best, and I thank you so much for your time.
It's been a real privilege, Joe, and thanks once again for having us on.
A delight. Thank you so much. Again, Paul Conroy is the author of Under the Wire, Marie Colvin's Final Assignment. The book is published by Weinstein Books. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.